National Radio Hub. IDXers, welcome to Market Scope for September 2010. Once again, we're going into the Aircheck Library and blowing some dust off some old tapes to present you with the sounds of radio from 1984.
Ben Fogelberg from the Innocent Age on 610 WTVN. Celestin here with you this morning. We will join ABC News at 4:30. We've been having some trouble with ABC all night long. Actually, the trouble is on their side of the line, and they obviously have things corrected now, so we will join ABC at 4:30 here on 610 TVM. We'll check out the radar weather watch forecast on the other side, too. And NOAA closing or cancellation information yet to report, but if we do have it, we'll have it first on 610 TVN.
Double, double, toil and trouble.
At the Park Hotel on Morse Road today from 5 to 7 p.m. and join all your friends at our afterward party from 610 WTVN.
Dave Clark 5 from 1964, that's because on 610 WTVN. We'll take a break now for national and international news from ABC. It's 4:30.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Don Ross. President Reagan heads to Chicago today, where he'll discuss his economic programs before a convention of the concrete industry.
610 TVN News Time, 4:34. The radar weather watch calling for flurries ending this morning, clearer and colder, a low of 14. Sunshine this morning giving way to variable cloudiness, some possible flurries, a high near 28. Mostly clear skies, cold Tuesday night, low of 17 degrees. And Wednesday, partly sunny, high near 34 degrees. Flurries in the area, 20 at the airport and 21 downtown at your weather station, 610 TVN. Dionne Warwick and Liz Evandros, how many times can we say goodbye? From 610, 19 in front of 5, and good morning, Celestine, with you. The stars are going to shine brightly tonight in East Rutherford, New Jersey. The NHL is holding its annual All-Star Game this season at the Brendan Byrne Arena. The big part of the story is whom won't be on hand. No less than 6 players selected for the game have had to drop out because of injuries. Chuck Underwood will have more in the story on 610 TVN later this morning. Let me see. Cleveland State beat Southwest Missouri State last night, 86-66. Some top 20 college games played. Number 3, Kentucky over Tennessee, 93-74. Kentucky number 3 right now. Number 4, Georgetown over Syracuse, 80-67. Number 10, Louisville defeated Southern Mississippi, 63-56. 15th-ranked Memphis State over Virginia Tech, 63-62. And in overtime, Vanderbilt upset number 18, Georgia. Final score was 81-74.
Coming Wednesday, February 8th, it's WTVN Night at the Ice Capade. And we'd like you to be our guest. Listen to 610 WTVN daily for a chance to win a pair of tickets to the Ice Capades. Yes, all the glamour and excitement of the Ice Capades could be yours. So keep listening for your chance to win from 610 WTVN.
That's nice. The latest from Paul McCartney, Pipes of Peace, the album That's So Bad on 610 TVN. Tonight with Easy Ed, you can learn how to stay above the water now that all the Christmas bills are starting to roll in. And you'll learn how to fend off your creditors if you're already sinking deep. Easy Ed tonight at 8 o'clock on 610 TVN. 10 minutes in front of 5, we'll look at the radar weather watch forecast here in a second. Looks like the flurries should be ending sometime today. No cancellations or closings as of yet. We'll have them, though. If we do have them, we'll have them first on 610 TVN.
Once in my life, I have someone who needs
me. 8 in front of 5 at 610 WTVN. Here's a look at the exclusive WTVN radar weather watch for all of Columbus and Central Ohio this morning. Flurries should be ending sometime. It's going to get colder. Still looking for a low of 14 this morning. Sunshine in the early morning hours giving way to variable cloudiness today. Some possible flurries near 28. Tonight, clear and cold, a low of 17 degrees. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 34. Still a little bit of flurry activity outside. It's 20 at the airport and 21 downtown. And your weather weather station, 610 TBN. Spandau Ballet on 610. A couple of minutes before 5, and news on the way next.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand.
Giant in Columbus, 610 WTVN.
New car buyers who think they have bought a lemon will have a new place to settle their grievances. The Attorney General of the State of Ohio and the Automobile Dealers Association are establishing a panel with statewide jurisdiction to settle consumer complaints against new car dealers. Celeste Friedman, 610 TVN.
Now to 2X FM, put your ear up to the stereo. It's time to get your morning fix. One thing leads to another. Columbus area weather. Some good news and some bad news. I'll give you the bad news first. Widely scattered snow flurries for this morning. Ah, but the good news, becoming sunny today with a high of 25. Ah, clear starshine tonight, low 15. Sunny and milder tomorrow with a high of 35. In the city, we're 18 in the middle of a 92-minute music jam with Peter Schilling on 92X FM. To XFM and Joe Jackson.
Don't you feel like trying something new? Always a better song, 92XFM.
XFM where Tom Kelly has another Mind Vendors question for you this morning at 7:25. This time, if you're the correct caller with the right answer, you're going to win a pair of Rec Spec frames from 2020 Vision and the Hot FM 92X. I've got your attention. This reminder for you, a free calendar is available from the Office of Travel and Tourism. Now, that calendar gives you information on the state's travel activities. It's really cool. You got the details on that? All you got to do is give me a call at 92XFM. XFM from 8219292. The West Side, a bunch of crazies been up all night. They wanted to hear some Soft Cell.
Sometimes I feel I've got to run away.
FM, Linda Harris just looking at this Muscle magazine that Kurt left. Aha, love this. Woo! Check it out, 92X, Columbus area weather. Some scattered snow flurries this morning, then becoming mostly sunny today. High 25, generally clear tonight, low around 15. Sunny and milder tomorrow with a high of 35. You can look forward to tomorrow. In the city right now, 17 with Rufus and Chaka Khan.
The Paul Letters, WXGT 92.3. And that's your market scope for this month. Remember, if you'd like to submit air checks from your hometown, send them to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351-1652. I and the membership would be very grateful. All you guys have a great time in Rochester, and now here's Fred with Musings from the Members.
This is Musings of the Members. The opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, or its editors. Members may muse by calling the Action Line, 24 hours a day.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Well, 740 in Toronto was off overnight last night. And this is the 30th of July. And I did find some station playing country music, but I couldn't get an ID on it. So maybe someone can help me with that. I found out this morning that Jerry Haydeck is retiring September the 23rd from doing weather on WJR Detroit. He's been in that business 45 years. He's certainly done a wonderful job.
This is Tim Hendel in Huntsville. I enjoyed Mark Durenberger's article about oldies and AM and radio, but I question the idea that rock and roll started in 1965, as the article seemed to say. We all know that it started probably a dozen years earlier. I really wish some station or group of stations would undertake a true 50s format that would go from 1950 to maybe 1961 or 62, would include the pop stuff, the Rosemary Clooney, Nat King Cole, Perry Como, the early rock such as Rock Around the Clock, early Little Richard, but would also focus on some of the really obscure stuff that kind of gave rock and roll a start. A 50s format that would go deep and not just play the same old stuff or try to pretend that it's really a 60s format like Channel 5 on XM Radio seems to do. I think such a format would be great to listen to. I love Mark Durenberger's radio out in the desert. But Mark, you know what I'd like even better if you did it during the day, say between the hours of 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Then we could really see what those beverage antennas do during the daytime. Well, we all know that at night stuff floats in and out. I'd be much more interested in seeing what it does during the day. And Wayne mentioned Ramblin' Lou of WXRL. Yes, I want to say that Ramblin' Lou in the Niagara Falls area must have been on the radio for at least 60 years, maybe more. I remember him on WJJL in Niagara Falls, 1440, at the early or at least the mid-50s. So congratulations to Ramblin' Lou. I heard him while I was up in New York in June, and he sounds almost the same as he always did. I wish I had made a recording of him, because he's really radio history in Western New York.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. Well, 1270 WHLD, Niagara Falls, New York, made a change last week. They've been doing religious programming, I think, for about the last, maybe 2-3 years. They're now Swing 1270. They're playing pretty well the adult popular standards, which I think is very good. They serve the Buffalo area and get into it very well. And that area hasn't had a station of that type for a few years since WECK in Cheektowaga let it go. On CFRB in Toronto, they let some people go, and one of them, I'm sorry to say, was John Donaby, who did the weekend morning show for a long time, although Ben Mercer, who has taken it over, sounds very nice and personable. And on the Fan 590, where I reported a couple of months ago about four people being let go, today, August 16th, they have taken two new people on. 9 to noon, they have a fellow, Andrew Crystal, who seems to be quite a character. And between noon and 3, they have Greg Brady, who is quite a hockey fan. So hopefully they'll do all right. But I'd still like to see a second sports station try it in Toronto again with some of the people that were let go from the Fan, because they're very quality people. And hook up with ESPN and like that. I picked up a station this morning about 8 o'clock, too, on 910. There was a preacher on there, but I didn't get an ID. I think it may be the station in Flint, Michigan, that was going to go on 900, and then I think they changed their minds and stayed on 910 when they got a power increase on that frequency.
And we have just enough time to give you a written muse, which came out of DX News magazine. This one is from Bob Harrison of Union, New Jersey. Bob writes, "Hello to everyone. I haven't DX'd in the past 10 years or so, but I've kept up my membership in the National Radio Club because DX News always seems to have something interesting. John Malachy's wonderful tribute to Slim Bryant of KDKA in the last issue really caught my eye. Slim never had a nationwide hit on the weekly Billboard charts, but in August of 1948, when DJs were asked by Billboard magazine to pick their favorite records of the past 12 months, Slim Bryant's record was listed amongst the top records of the year. Looking through the radio and music sections of Billboard magazine of that time period, it is striking to see that nearly all radio stations included a great deal of variety in their formats, with public affairs programming, local newscasts, network feeds, classical music, and hillbilly music included on many stations. I'm particularly interested in the hillbilly side of things, and I have noticed that KDKA was certainly not alone among the Clear Channel stations in having a slot for such programming. Other Clear Channel stations with such offerings included WLS, WOWO, WLW, WRVA, and of course WWVA and WSM, where live Saturday night country music fair continued into the 21st century. The old Billboard magazines also contained some surprises. For example, WFIL in Philadelphia had a live Saturday night country music show that was carried on the ABC radio network. And in metropolitan New York City, at least five different stations carried country music weekly, including WOV with Rosalie Allen, who claimed to be the first female DJ of any genre in radio. So where is radio today? This past weekend, I was engaged in a conversation with an elderly gentleman and two young college students. I asked if any of them played a musical instrument, and the elderly gentleman said, "Yeah, I play the radio." The two students kind of snickered, and one asked sarcastically, "What's a radio?" And then they laughed some more. Alas, radio is simply ignored by young people. And deservedly so, I'm afraid. I plan a little automobile trip westward on Interstate 78 and southward on Interstate 81 in the next month or so, and I'll be scanning the AM dial to see if there is any hope out there in the hinterlands. Watch for a report in September. Meanwhile, good listening, if you can find it. That's from Bob Harrison of Union, New Jersey.
Mark Dernberger here in the Musings Control Center responding to Tim Hendel's suggestion that we focus on daytime rather than after dark catches in some of our reports. Tim, your suggestion is timely. During our desert de-expedition, we will, of course, be looking for the elusive after dark signals that can only be captured through weary patience in the time past dark 30, and especially as dawn and the gray line make things interesting. But there's a parallel plan afoot to capture the daytime universe as well. Not only will we be doing so in the desert from both ends of two beverages, oriented approximately east-west and northwest-southeast, but during our journey west from Minnesota, we plan to use a newly developed super flagpole antenna, stopping at the side of the road, daytime of course, and capturing all the daytime signals from each of several states. Kind of an ambitious project, and we hope it works out. Hope this answers your questions, and we look forward to bringing you the results on future band scans.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And if you'd like to muse, it's very simple to do. You just need to pick up your telephone. Give us a call at 646-402-5685. That's 646-402-5685. And then go to Funkin' Wagnalls Porch on the 6th Tuesday of the month, and you'll find a mayonnaise jar. Reach inside. You'll find a little slip of paper with this number on it. The number is 62544. That's 62544 is the password to get in and leave your musings to the members. Now here's Mark.
Emanating live from the playback head of your cassette deck, this is the DX Audio Service.
Cassettes. The Weird Uncle is Back on Deck by August Brown, Los Angeles Times. Yes, those dated keepsakes cassette tapes are back in the mix. When the vinyl LP began its modest but highly publicized commercial comeback a few years ago, that format felt easy to love again, with sprawling artwork, pristine sound quality, and the adoring ritual of flipping album sides. Its return united young Bohemia and their boomer parents alike. Not so for the lowly cassette tape. To mainstream music fans who spent the 80s detangling spools with a paperclip, listening to heat-damaged sounds warble out of the speakers, and blindly fast-forwarding and reversing to get to a favorite song, cassettes might be the most despised, instantly discarded, and fidelity-challenged medium to ever vie for mass popularity. Cassette tapes remind me of dollar stores and Kmart, said Chris Johnley, the 22-year-old co-founder of Kill Hurt, a new Hollywood record label specializing in small batches of outre noise rock released on cassettes dubbed in his living room. He's no Luddite. Johnley works in a major label's digital marketing department, and co-founder Katrina Boza just wrapped up an internship at the hotly tipped L.A. indie label I Am Sound Records. They both know that tape is like the weird uncle no one talks about. And yet, across pockets of America, and especially among shoestring record labels, DJs, and boutique stores in Los Angeles, this weird uncle is again a welcome guest. A tiny but busy tape-based music culture is growing from roots in economic necessity, thrift store crate digging, and, yes, a pride in being difficult for its own sake. But cassettes also carry a different nostalgia, one not tracked by SoundScan. They evoke high school mixes from nascent crushes and trips to the beach soundtracked by sun-bleached tunes recorded off the radio. The emotional archaeology of trawling through shoeboxes of cracked cassettes has a resonance that iTunes doesn't offer. After all, John Lee said, MP3s sound terrible anyway, so why not have something that sounds terrible that you can hold? Originally marketed for dictation and portable voice recording, mass-produced cassettes became a format for distributing music in the U.S. in the 60s. Their notoriously subpar fidelity improved throughout the 70s, and with the rise of the portable Sony Walkman in the 1980s, and as automobiles came equipped with standard cassette decks, the tape became a second viable mainstream format, alongside vinyl LPs and later compact discs. And the less said about the 8-track tape of the 1970s, the better. Like MP3s, tapes compensated for their relatively degraded sound quality with portability and, notoriously, the ability for fans to record and share music. This sparked a small panic, now impossibly quaint, among record labels worried that home taping would gut retail record sales. But even as the compact disc usurped it as a mass medium, as early as 2007, pre-recorded cassette albums constituted only 0.05% of all SoundScan reported album sales, and in 2009 only 34,000 were sold, those convenient features kept the cassette alive at the musical margins. For artists in fringe genres such as noise and garage rock who want to document their music but only expect to sell a few copies, home-dubbed tape remains an economical godsend. By trawling eBay with a few $100, an artist or novice label head can buy used duplication equipment and bang out 100 copies over a weekend. Tape fits in with a belief system of how intimate music is made, said Britt Brown, co-founder with his wife Amanda Brown of Eagle Rock-based Not Not Fun, which releases much of their catalog of psychedelic noisy rock by bands such as Pocahontas and Robidor on cassette. And I've never seen such voraciousness as in people who want a limited-run tape. That fetishistic quality is part of what has sustained the format. Sonic Youth's Thurston Moore, a longtime tape aficionado, curated a 2005 book, Mixtape, dedicated to the art and culture of homemade tape culture. For years, the L.A. label Death Bomb Arct nurtured a subscription club of home-assembled tapes for artists such as Lucky Dragons in editions of 100 copies. Not Not Fun has released cassettes wrapped in medical gauze and cassettes taped to beer cozies with a lukewarm beer inside it. Demand is high enough for labels like the La Puente-based Bridgetown Records and Fullerton's Burger Records to put out dozens of strange and abrasive projects a year and turn a self-sustaining profit. The cost of professional duplication is also low enough, usually less than a dollar a copy with artwork, that editions of a few hundred make economic sense, unlike with CD or vinyl duplication. The office of Burger Records is a clear case of how the long trail of cassette culture can eke out a small thriving business. Founded by Lee Rickard and Sean Borman in 2007, the label's principles have a kind of spacey, goofy energy that's lost to modernity and are most animated when enumerating favorite forgotten 70s punk acts or trawling through vintage surf movie VHS discards. The retail arm of Burger on an exurban stretch south of Cal State Fullerton offers reams of coveted and kitschy vinyl and ratty couches for weekly movie nights. But Burger's ear for big hits and small genres gives its releases a reliable cachet that larger labels salivate over. We sell out of every single tape we do, and I know Sub Pop is listening to everything we put out, Borman said. Burger usually issues batches of 250 and charges $6 a copy, though some high-profile releases by bands like the Black Lips get 1,000 copies pressed. Their business model doesn't allow for huge profit margins, but their business sense is dead on. The aforementioned taste-making Seattle indie label Sub Pop signed two Burger-anointed acts, Jail and Happy Birthday, and Burger throws high-profile parties at festivals such as South by Southwest. Yet, like with vinyl, there is an upper threshold of sales that tape culture will support. You'd be hard-pressed to find a store in 2010 selling new cassette decks, even if Los Angeles has a unique advantage in this culture, where, unlike in New York, most local fans of squalling noise rock also own junky 90s sedans with tape decks. But tape culture rewards magpies of tossed-off stereo equipment and thrift store digging. Mark Frosty McNeil of the L.A.-based DJ Collective Dublab recently revamped his cassette DJ night at Silver Lake's Hyperion Tavern, which highlights the weird universe of found sounds. Tape was really cheap to make, so you can find things like voice therapy cassettes and far-out third-world pop, said McNeil. I remember Ariel Pink gave me a tape of his stuff that had clearly been dubbed from one tape to the next, so it was one of the worst quality things I'd ever heard, but that also made it one of the craziest. The format, however, will probably stay resigned to internet mail order. Only niche outlets like Los Felices Vacation, the Fairfax District's Family Bookstore, and Chinatown's Ooga Booga make shelf space for new releases. Duplication companies still in the business work mainly for Christian audiences, dubbing sermons or academic presses printing lectures. Tape orders have definitely picked up from almost nothing in the last couple years, and it's been almost entirely indie bands, said Michael McKinney, the president of M2 Communications, the Pasadena-based CD and DVD duplicating plant where Burger presses its cassettes. M2 issues between 6,000 and 10,000 tapes a month at around 70 cents apiece, McKinney said, a number clearly down from its 80s heyday of hundreds of thousands, but up from its 90s and odd-odds doldrums of virtually zero. The second wind of mass-produced cassettes may have a mechanical expiration date as well, as the motors, gears, and tape heads, which read and amplify the information on the cassettes used to manufacture the format, become scarce. It's a novelty, and it will die down, McKinney said. If the format is to continue thriving, it will be in homes like the Browns, where a life's worth of tapes spill from every cabinet, and at stores like Burger that will haunt the dreams of obsessed record nerds decades in the future. The reasons tape failed in the mainstream is why it's thriving in the margins today. It's cheap, but durable and easily duplicable. It's not the stuff of huge industry money, but it holds an allure. I get so nervous around iPods, Amanda Brown said. If someone made a hot pink ghetto blaster, I swear that every kid at Hollywood High would have one. And that's a story called Cassettes, The Weird Uncle is Back on Deck by August Brown, published in the Los Angeles Times. This is Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks, Mark. Now let's turn our attention to an article that appeared in Radio World magazine titled, Now Tom Ray is Doubting HD Radio. What's interesting about this is that Tom was one of the biggest supporters of IBOC. The Buckley Broadcasting VP and Director of Engineering, who oversees 50,000-watt WOR in New York, posted an opinion piece in a trade publication this month that holds some real doubts about AM HD radio's viability. Now, this might not seem as a big deal to some, but Tom is, and always has been, one of HD radio's biggest supporters. The article mentions his attempt to buy a Ford Escape at a local New York State dealership that hopefully included factory HD radio. Ford was supposed to be offering as an option for the 2010 models from what he understood. But no one at the dealership knew anything about HD radio, and all they said was that he was the first person who has ever asked about it. Ray tells RBR and TVBR magazine, on the dealer side, it doesn't surprise me because if they're not fed the information from the corporate headquarters in Detroit, they're not going to know what it is. They are told, here's your Sirius display, which quite frankly, there's a huge Sirius display right there in the showroom. They're told, here's your Sirius radio, push it. He adds, what is very dismaying is the fact that when I talked to people at Ford, there wasn't one person over there who could help me, and most of them told me that I was the very first call they ever had about HD radio. So at least they knew what it was, but nobody could direct me. Tom ended up buying the car anyway and went through hell and high water to install aftermarket HD radio gear and other devices like Sirius XM radio to make the car work with the car's sync system. He finally got it all working, but it wasn't easy, and the car is certainly now a target for petty theft. Tom tells us 3 months later that he had to buy his wife a car. There was still no HD radios to be found. They had a couple 2011 Edges on the lot, not one HD radio in the bunch. Finally, there was something on the Ford website about the fact that their HD radios would be in the 2011 Edge models. When I originally went looking for the first Ford vehicle, I went to their website and found a press release dated 12/30 of 09 that says HD radio will be available in the 2010 model year Fords. So based on that, I went to get my factory radio put in this thing. That's when I got the deer in the headlights look. He went on to mention how WOR's news director owns a foreign vehicle with an OEM HD radio in it, but the AM reception is poor. Ray lamented on how hard it was to get an HD radio through a dealership, and therefore how unlikely it might be for, say, Joe Consumer, who is much less likely to have knowledge of HD radio or electronics, would go through these kind of hoops to integrate it into a vehicle system. He concluded that for WORAM, HD has generally had very little return on investment, and that if the IBOC exciter failed, they might not replace it or repair it. Ray agrees AMHD radio is being turned off around the country in many markets on many stations. Here's what he told us on that topic. To the people who say AM radio is the only place we're going to get our information in times of distress and times of trouble, it's not necessarily HD radio where the problem is. The problem is communities themselves that are not supporting AM radio stations. So if things get worse, in addition to AM HD being turned off, the AM stations themselves may be also turned off. You can accept places like New York and Detroit, where the very top stations are AM stations, but it's not necessarily the case all over the country. Very bluntly, if one of those exciters goes, and you're talking $15,000 to $20,000 per exciter, what station right now is going to take a look at that and say, you know, I think if we get that replaced, nope, there's no HD radios out there, who's going to listen to it? He understands how hard it is to market new products, but it seems iPad has had none with the consumer adoption. It sells itself, so why can't HD Radio? He says we should all ramp up the marketing and get the radios out there, or just simply move on. Well, about a week later, there was an answer to Tom's letter in the form of an article in Radio World magazine by CEO and President Bob Struble of Ibiquity. And he writes, "When Tom Ray talks about his concerns with the HD radio rollout, we listen. There has been no bigger proponent of digital radio technology, and HD radio technology would have not gotten off the ground without his efforts. We have an active, productive dialogue with Tom on these matters. Tom's experience at the Ford dealership are very disappointing. We believe that they reflect the growing pains which often occur when companies launch new technologies. Tom hit the lot as factory-installed HD radio receivers were just launching. Ford is implementing a rolling launch of this technology. So as new 2011 models hit the showroom floor at various times in 2010, they are coming out with the HD radio receivers. When Tom shopped, HD radio technology was only available in the Super Duty trucks and Mustangs. Had he been able to hold out with his old Explorer for another couple of months, he would have been able to purchase an Escape with a factory-installed HD radio receiver, as these vehicles hit dealerships the first week of August. Other 2011 model year Ford vehicles that have launched with HD radio technology include Taurus, Fusion, Flex, and the E-Series. Lincoln, Ford's premium brand, currently offers HD radio technology in their MKS and MKT lines. More Ford and Lincoln vehicles will arrive with HD radios as the 2011 model year becomes available. In most cases, HD radio technology is included in the voice-activated navigation units. In the near future, cars with the My Ford and My Lincoln Touch premium auto system will also include this technology. It would have certainly helped if the dealer personnel were better educated on HD radio technology. Again, these are growing pains, in my opinion. We have a solid dealer training program in place and have integrated our training material into Ford's 2011 model year dealer training initiatives. But with more than 6,000 dealerships in the United States, these efforts would take time. Ford has done a lot to educate their personnel and consumers on the benefits of HD radio technology, including comprehensive treatment in owner's manuals. I have also listed below several web-based HD radio information pieces for Ford. On the bright side, no one can question Tom's dedication to the advancing of radio into the digital age after reading about his efforts to install an aftermarket HD radio solution in his new car. He should get some kind of an award. Increased electronic integration in cars has made it virtually impossible in some cases to install any aftermarket radios with or without HD radio technology. This is why overall sales in this segment have plummeted, although HD radio receiver sales in car aftermarkets have skyrocketed. This is also why it's so critical to get HD radio receivers installed in cars. And the news has never been better. In 2010, 15 different automakers are offering HD radio receivers in their cars across 86 different vehicle lines. Of those, the technology is standard on 36 vehicle lines. OEM receiver sales will be more than double this year, with many more exciting launch announcements in the queue. In fact, as I joked with Tom, it's ironic that his negative experience happened at a time when the consumer rollout of HD radio technology is stronger than it's ever been. We are seeing dramatic receiver sales increase across the segments. OEM auto, consumer electronics, and the new portable HD radio category. Overall sales of HD radio receivers will more than double in 2010, and that is on top of the doubling from 2008 to 2009. Can anyone point to any other facet of AM and FM that has seen this kind of growth in the last several years? So we feel the overall progress and prospects for HD radio technology are bright. But there are some bumps in the road, and unfortunately, our good friend Tom experienced one. We are committed to working with him and all our partners to push technology forward and to make those negative experiences fewer and farther between. And those are the words of Bob Struble from Ibiquity. Now that you've heard those two stories, why not weigh in with your thoughts about the future of IBOC? Give us a call on the Action Line and tell us what you think. Listen up, DX Audio Service member. You may have a chance to not only log some DX, but also win some DX dollars. Listen up. See if you can log one of these stations. Word is out that V6AI on 1491 kHz from Colonia on the island of Yap in the Federated States of Micronesia is going to be back on the air with 10,000 watts of power, non-directional. The station has been operating as 500-watt KUTE FM 88.1 since the AM transmitter broke down in January of 2009, leaving residents of the Outer Islands without any radio service. At exactly 9 a.m. today, which was August the 24th, the media division began a simulcast through both AM and FM stations to inform people who were tuned in on the FM side to switch to AM and to monitor how good the signal is. At the same time, the governor's office also contacted the neighboring islands and requested them to check their area reception and to report back so the media division could do some fine-tuning adjustments on the new AM transmitter in order for better reception. Because of the lengthy distance between the Yap main islands and the neighboring islands, AM transmission is required for better reception to the neighboring islands. With AM, the neighboring islands can tune in to important government information as well as other broadcast matters. Most of the neighboring islands have responded back to the governor's office within 1 hour of the call this morning and reported that they have received fine reception on the radio signal in their respective areas. But in the meantime, the office is still waiting for confirmation from some other islands that have not been able to send in their reports via SSB radio. Following a thorough inspection of the new AM transmitter by technical engineers who installed the transmitter, nothing suspicious has yet been detected as a sign that something could be wrong. But they'll continue to monitor the AM transmitter until they're sure there is no problems. In the meantime, the AM radio will not be in full-time operation and may be discontinued from time to time until such new programs are produced and approved schedules are in place. The Department of Youth and Civic Affairs has acquired that brand new XR12 transmitter with the capacity to broadcast at 15,000 watts. It's a Nautel transmitter. And if you happen to hear the station and would like to send in a reception report to the station, contact Sebastian Temekin. That's Sebastian, S-E-B-A-S-T-I-A-N, Temekin, T-A-M-A-G-K-E-N, at V6AI Radio, Post Office Box 117, Colonia, C-O-L-O-N-I-A, comma, Yap, Y-A-P, FM 96943. Or you can email S. Tamagan, that's S underscore T-A-M-A-G-K-E-N, at yahoo.com. And what about some stateside DX? Well, tune your radio receiver to around 1710 kilohertz and listen between 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 10th of September through 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the 12th of September, and see what you might just be able to hear. If you can record it or report it, contact us here at the DX Audio Service. We'd like to know, especially recordings that you can share with your friends here on the DX Audio Service. And that's about it for this edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for September 2010. And just before we get out of here, I just wanted to mention a couple of things. First of all, supposedly there's going to be a rate increase by the United States Post Office next year. And if you're concerned about it and the possibility of us raising dues, you can renew your DX Audio Service at any time just by sending in your dues, and we'll just add it on to your current subscription. That locks you in at the old rate. However, after we announce a rate increase, whenever the post office gets around to telling us it's going to happen, then any renewals after that point have to be at the new rate. So it's up to you if you want to renew now on the old rate, or just take your time and wait till the post office increases to the new rate. Well, that's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service, and I'm going to get prepared for my trip to a very, very interesting place where people sometimes don't want to go. But I have a feeling that the DX is going to be hot. We'll see you next month.